There are dire warnings that New South Wales will be hit by increasingly extreme weather.
2015 was the hottest year since climate records began.
Your show this July was the single hottest month in recorded history.
Australia sweltered through its hottest spring on record.
Climate change is now affecting every country on every continent.
It's the rate that's a great concern.
And what do you put that rate down to?
Oh, it's human activity.
We have everything we need. Some still doubt that we have the will to act, but I say the will to act is itself a renewable resource.
Hello and welcome to episode 26 of Climactic, your story on climate change. And this week it really is all about your story, because we've got our first interview from Torquay. Hey there, Max.
Hi, how are you going?
Very good. So I was so excited a couple days ago when you sent this interview through. I'd been like sort of pushing this uphill for a while, this idea that I want to have more people on the show doing these interviews. And then there you were, right when I needed it the most. You said, oh, I've just done this interview. And it was fantastic. And I cannot wait to be sharing it with people. Before we get into all that, can you just let people know who you are and whereabouts you're from?
So I'm Maxine, and I'm originally from Gippsland or Latrobe Valley. So the coal centre of Victoria. So I grew up in that area and then moved to Geelong for university. Overseas in between, came back to Melbourne, and now I've moved back to Torquay. So I've decentralised and, yeah, working on my own business, which I've started up. You were thinking, I guess, for another presenter, and I was so excited when you asked me. I was just stoked.
I was really excited. You were excited.
Oh, yeah. It was just like, whoa, this is on my goals, you know.
It worked out really well.
Become the presenter of a sustainable radio show.
And I said, better. I came to you and said, do you want to be a presenter on a sustainable radio show?
That was exactly it. I was like, hang on a minute. There's a thing on my to-do list, and I can put a tick next to that. Podcast even better, because the reach,
yeah, and doing it from anywhere
is so wide.
That's right.
Yeah
Fantastic. So. Well, luckily, if people want to know a lot more about you, Max, you were our first guest on the show, so people can just go back to climactic.fm/1. You were number one, and
number
to hear
one.
All about Max and your backstory and everything. So, Max, you're living down in Torquay. Do you expect to be able to bring us a lot of stories from down there?
Yes, definitely. There's a lot going on. Greater Geelong area and the Surf Coast region, as well as regional Victoria. I just think there's a lot going on in this area, and I think it's really important to tell the regional story as well, how climate change is affecting regional areas. And we're lucky, I guess, in some senses, compared to what's going on in New South Wales. It's a little different, but mm-hmm. I dare say there's impacts coming, and there have been. I mean, we've been through a pretty bad bushfire season in the past since we moved here. We actually got evacuated. It was a watch and act, so it was like, okay, we're out. It was Christmas Day, so yeah, it's definitely affecting our region as well. There's other impacts around our region, like population growth, trying to have sustainable development when mm-hmm. I think the developers are very aware that they're going to be restricted at some stage, so they're just trying to pack in as much as they can before yep. that happens. So there's a lot of concern, and politically it's very a very interesting time at the moment.
Which leads very well into this interview you just did. Tell us a little bit about your guest today and where you met them and why you thought they'd be interesting to have on.
So I think I met Damo for the first time, Damien Cole. I met him, I think it was at a screening environmental movie that was put on by Surf mm-hmm. Coast Energy Group. And this was prior to us becoming committee members, so I signed up as a committee member. It was over a year ago now, and I've just re-signed up, committed for another year at least. Damien came on to our committee as well, which was awesome, because we've got a lot of long-term and dedicated members and committee members, but it was great to see somebody that was in their 30s as well come on board. So, and that's, I think, a big part of why Damien and I are so keen to bring more people of our age into this issue. And interestingly enough, the voting demographic of South Barwon is, yeah, the average, the bulk of the age is around 38 years old. So that's us. So it's really interesting, because originally you'd think it would be older.
Yeah, you guys are indicative of the average sort of resident of the area. Those big waves of people moving out
exactly.
from the city to the country has been that life stage. Well, Max, it sounds like you're going to have a lot of good stories to bring us from that community, because those are fascinating dynamics to it, with that constant juggle between how to keep it sustainable, but how to allow for the growth you're going to experience and you're already experiencing. So I really look forward to sharing this interview with people, and we really look forward to more in the future.
I'm very excited to be on board. It's really cool. And yeah, to bring the voices of our area and regional Victoria to Climactic. And I'm sitting here in my living room with Damien Cole in Torquay.
G'day, g'day.
And we're excited because it's pretty good timing for our little movements.
Yes, it is. It's perfect timing. Yeah. There's a lot going on in the area and in
yeah,
the community.
Definitely. We're just off the back of a Surf Coast Energy Group committee meeting last night.
Yep, very productive.
New committee members joining up, so we're really excited. And there's news articles in the paper, in the Geelong Advertiser and the Surf Coast Times. And what are they saying out there?
Well, it's obviously there's a state election coming up in the very near future on November 24th. There's been a lot of commotion about the overdevelopment going on in coastal towns, particularly around Torquay. So finally, Liberal and Labor have kind of stood up and said they want to do something about it, although none of it is really, I don't know, it's all a bit of motherhood statements at the moment. Oh, we want to protect it, you know, but what does that actually mean? We're not 100% sure yet.
How to win an election 101.
Yes. Yeah. That's one way of winning an election.
Yeah. So let's go from the now. What are you up to at the moment? Apart from Surf Coast Energy Group, you've got a fair bit going on. So let's hear about that.
I'm staying, I'm kind of keeping pretty busy. Well, funnily enough, speaking of the election, may as well go straight into that, which I've decided to run as an independent for the seat of South Barwon this year.
Amazing.
So that's one of them. And that started out through, I guess, an alliance of different community groups in the Torquay area, including Surf Coast Energy Group, also known as SCEG. Just being concerned about the community not being represented properly and just having a lot of development and a lot of things happening in the town, which the community doesn't really actually want, but we're being, I guess, ignored from the local council and state government. So the Greater Torquay Alliance was formed.
How long has that been going
for? We started meetings earlier this year, probably in April, and we've really just got going over the last kind of, we've been having meetings for 6 months, but we've really been trying to get all our ducks in a row before we came out live. So we've got a website up and running, got obviously our Facebook pages, and we've been doing a lot of research into the kind of legalities behind all the overdevelopment, actually looking at the different things like the Ballerine yellow gums and the offset changing in regulations between 2013 and 2017.
There's a change coming, or is it lapsing?
It's already started. So we had the whole situation with that is there was the 2013 regulations,
yep.
which determined the value pretty much of these yellow guns, these Ballerine yellow guns.
They're endangered.
So yep. 92% of their habitat and 92% of them are gone. So we're left with 8%, and a huge part of them are in Spring Creek Valley.
Spring Creek. This battle's been going on for quite some time, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been going on for...
When was the Red Rally?
That was 2009.
Amazing.
This has been going on for over 10 years. And the thing is, listen, it's still going. And there's still a very big number of us that are actually on the front lines fighting it. And not just fighting it as opposing it morally, but we're actually looking at some of the things that are being done behind the scenes, which we don't think are, you know, very much representative of the general population. Which includes this Ballerine yellow gum thing, getting back to that. So they had the regulations from 2013, which obviously that's what the original developers went with.
Mm.
And the regulations actually changed as of December last year. But it was under the discretion of the Surf Coast Council as to whether they use the 2013 regulations or the 2017 regulations. And they've opted with the 2013 ones. Which is better for the developers because the 2017 regulations tightened up the offsets and made it a lot harder. They actually went 22 times higher.
Wow.
So, you know, so 22 times the cost. And that what they've got is they've got a 12-month grace period because the planning of Spring Creek development was started before then. So
we're in that grace period.
We're in that grace period, but it actually finishes on December 17th, which happens to be just over 3 weeks after a state election. There's a lot going on. There's a lot to take in. And I'm honestly still trying to get my head around the whole lot as well.
I think that from chatting to you, from when you first announced that you were running, which I was really excited to hear about, I definitely think that you're aligned and you know what you're thinking, and it seems like it's coming together really nicely.
Yeah.
It's
good timing. Listen, and this is the thing for me. I this was never part of the plan.
What was the moment? What happened? What prompted you to put your hand up?
Yeah, I don't know. So listen, with the development of this Greater Torquay Alliance, there was a lot of people who have been quite prominent in the community for some time. So we had people from the 3228 Residents Association.
That's our postcode, by the way, if anyone's listening. 3228.
Yeah, it's the Greater Torquay area, essentially. And then we had members of SANE, which is Surfers Appreciating the Natural Environment. Mm-hmm. We had Surf Rider Australia, Dunwana Community Garden. Yep, that's the one, I think. So we had a bunch of representation from these different groups.
They have a community garden down there, yeah?
Yeah, that's the one. Surf Coast Energy Group, so I was a representative of that. We were talking about how we could most kind of make an impact, to redirect our town into a place that we can all be happy and live, kind of increase or at least keep our social well-being and our cultural identity and our natural environment. And we kept, they kept getting brought up by all these other people I'm pretty new to the whole game. I'll be honest. I'm pretty new to the whole activism kind of conservation thing. I've spent most of my 20s traveling and kind of doing probably a little bit more of a selfish thing, I guess, but a bit of reconnaissance, really. A bit of research, traveling the world and doing some research and figuring out exactly where I fit into this world. And then again, sitting around at this table full of all these people that knew exactly what was going on and kind of they seemed to be talking all this kind of big stuff and policies and planning and, overlays and all of this. And I kind of started going, am I a bit over my head here? Like these people think, seem to know what's going on. And they kept bringing up this thing of, it'd be great to run a candidate. It'd be great to run a candidate to really push Liberal and Labor, because we're also the seat of South Barwon, which Torquay is in, is I think the second most marginal seat in Victoria behind Richmond.
And currently Liberals are in at the moment.
Yeah, so we've got Liberals in, but
and
obviously...
is Richmond similar?
So they've got Labor in, and funnily enough, the Richmond seat is held by the Planning Minister.
Oh, that is right.
Which is pretty interesting to think. I don't know how political everyone is or whatever, but
I think there's a lot of listeners out there that are super political.
Let's go it's pretty simple that, listen, I would never want to be a planning minister because you're just going to be hated no matter what, really. So to put the planning minister into the most kind of sought after seat and the most kind of marginal seat.
With the Greens chomping at the,
that's pretty interesting. So I guess that they kept bringing it up and kind of thinking it'd be great to run a candidate. And then after a while, I just started thinking, I was like, well, I might not be all over it in terms of the policies and the kind of as I say, I'm still learning. And these, the people that I've been working with are just amazing, like the work that they do around town, and they've been doing it for years. They kind of know the ins and outs. And I just kind of thought, and this is where I think I've developed quite a lot, even over the last kind of 6 months or 12 months, but I just kind of thought, well, what have I got to offer? And I thought, well, I can rally the troops, I can be a voice, and I've kind of got that youth on my side being, just turned 32.
You're a youngin'.
Well, that's it. So it's all relative, but for a political side and the people that I'm working with the Greater Torquay Alliance, all a fair bit wiser than I am. They've got a wealth of wealth and
them.
A whole head of grey hair, majority of them. so they're a little older than me and kind of, I just kind of thought, all right, well, I can kind of, my bit is maybe I can, and I at the end I kind of said, like, one of the meetings I kind of said, are we still looking at a candidate or what? And they said, well, no one wants to put their hand up. And I just kind of like sheepishly just kind of the hand slowly went up, and I said, I'll do it, you know, and they were just like, oh, really? And I said, well, and I said, listen, this isn't going to be about me. This has to come from the whole group, and we have to really represent the whole, which we are doing, but I really want this to be a community kind of representation. So I'm going to need the help of as many people as I can, because it has to be. That's how resilient kind of change does happen, is from the bottom up, from grassroots up, and it has to, you know, include everyone. So
especially now.
Yeah. So
it's
that's
very, very brave.
Yeah.
And, but you're right, with knowledge behind you of all this wealth of knowledge and skills and everything that people can bring, I mean, that's what government should be really about, is the community coming together and having the voice.
Well, that's what a democracy is intended to be.
Yeah.
It's that's what we do, is we elect representative to represent our communities, whether it's on a local level, state level or federal level. And unfortunately, I think we've and it's really come to a head now, but we've been seeing it for a long time now, where it's now really, it's just, they've turned it into, it's not politics. And this is, I kind of got my head around it the other day, where it's not politics that's necessarily in shambles, because politics is the everyday workings for every single one of us. It's education, it's health, it's you know, it's absolutely everything, right, that we do. It's security, it's jobs, it's environment, the whole lot. So politics isn't the problem, it's the politicians. And the politicians, I think, are just completely out of touch with the people that they're supposedly representing. And they've gotten so caught up in this 4-year terms.
Getting the votes,
yeah. Making sure that they get reelected, making sure that they keep their job, and that they also, the other thing is that it's turned into this game where they're looking after the corporations and it's just really lost its way as a whole, you know, and that's why we decided that we needed to run a candidate. And this is the interesting thing, is I started it off purely as the Greater Talk Alliance to try and get a little bit of political bargaining chip. And since I've started now, I'm just looking at it. I'm going 100% for the win. I'm having a crack. I'm coming for these suckers. You know what I mean? Like, I'm really because I've had enough. Like, I just think that the way they're doing things is so 20th century, and we have 21st century problems knocking at the doorstep. You know, it's barred. The 21st century issues have come flying through the door, and we've got no way of stopping it at the moment with the current system we have. So,
and climate change is
front and center. Yeah. And climate change is the number one threat, and you can put it all in together. Our social well-being depends on our climate, you know, and everything around it. Our economy is our climate. There's one thing that we cannot forego, and that's our natural environment. And we need to really start looking at this very seriously, which I just don't feel that our governments are.
And that's what is mainly ultimately affecting the yellow gum.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Well, it's a combination of everything. There's pressure and stresses coming from all different directions. But yeah, a lot of it is either in part due to climate change or it's accelerating climate change. And what drives me absolutely crazy is just the fact that environment always tends to come last on the agenda, you know.
Like if I was a yellow gum and I was endangered, maybe they'd think about it. Or if you were, you know, I'm a yellow gum, I need help here.
Exactly. And
we had a voice.
And that's exactly it. Yeah, if we had a voice, that's exactly it. So I just look at that as the environment just as number one. It's just the one thing that is non-negotiable. Because, and this is the way I kind of put it sometimes, and it might not be politically correct, but you know what? Like, equal rights in whether it's feminism or race or whatever, or that means nothing if we don't have the environment. You know, our economical gain or jobs in Queensland or, you know, like tourism or any of that. Like, yes, it's front and center for our economy now, today, but without the environment, we've got nothing. If we can't breathe, then we're all gone anyway. So that's it's plain and simple without trying to get it too dramatic, you know.
So
dramatic.
Just hope for some acid rain and then maybe something change will happen.
Well, that's kind of essential. We kind of have to do it.
No. We're not asking for acid rain.
No.
So did you always think like this?
Yes. Yeah. Listen, I had a very fortunate upbringing. I've had Yeah, I've had an amazing 32 years.
Tell us a bit about your parents and what their background is and how you see the world.
Well, when two people love each other, I didn't think I'd be having this conversation. Yeah. So my parents are from Torquay. My dad is a pretty well-known surfboard shaper.
Mm-hmm.
And my mum is, she's just an angel. She's one of the most incredible human beings I've ever met.
And are they connected to the environment themselves?
Well, yeah. Like, my dad is more so. And I've been kind of figuring this out as I go, because obviously being, you know, when you're the child of two different people, you kind of start analysing what you get from different character traits and things.
Mm.
And I think I got my social and environmental activism definitely from my dad. And then I've got more of my...
I can see that.
Yeah.
If anyone hasn't heard of Maurice Cole, look him up. He's got a few YouTube videos, I think, and probably some rants here and there. He knows what he thinks.
Yeah, he's a very strong, he's a strong-minded character, and this is where I definitely am too. If you round me up, I can definitely get quite energized and passionate. But then I've got my mum's side, and she's just this, like, beautiful soul who's, just never wishes harm on anyone. And not that my dad does, but, so I've got this kind of nice balance, I think. But they actually moved to France back in 1981 after my dad.
Now, you weren't born then, because I was born in 82 and I'm older than you.
No. So that's it. So my dad was part of the Australian team for a world, like their world amateur titles or something for surfing.
Great.
And fell in love with the place, came home, grabbed my mum, and then went back there. And then, and then my sister was born, and then I was born 3 years later. And then, so I grew up, I spent the first 9 years of my life in France, in the southwest of France, in a little town called Hossegor, which is one of the more famous surfing areas in the world.
Parlez-vous français?
Oui, je parle français.
Ah, pas de souci.
Yeah, listen, so this is all part of it. I grew up speaking both languages, which is really cool. I'd speak English at home and then French everywhere else. And like my parents have never had a normal 9-to-5 job, and they've never had I've never had the putting quotation marks kind of average lifestyle or kind of upbringing. It was always pretty out there. And one of the things that really got me started in all this was when I was maybe 6 or 7 years old, and my dad really, we used to be a very, very much a kind of go-to house for any traveling surfers.
Mm-hmm.
Especially all the professional surfers who used to come from Australia and America and things like that. And I remember this one year, it was the kind of time when the French government was nuclear testing in the Pacific.
Yeah, in the Morrell Atoll.
Exactly. Mm. So, and then my dad,
that's when I stopped learning French, by the way.
Is it? Well, there you go.
No more.
That's it. Yeah, well, that's... They did get a pretty bad reputation from that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my dad, I'm a little bit shady on the actual details, but he organized a rally with all the professional surfers. And I just have this like clear memory of just all of the world's best surfers in my living room painting up signs, saying no more testing. And we all sprayed our hair different colors, and we had all this stuff going on, all these really cool t-shirts. And it was, I just felt this real sense of just like, we're doing something right for the greater good kind of thing. And I was like, I don't know, 6 or 7 maybe. Mm. I just knew like when they explained to me what was happening, and I was just like, why would they do that? Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Mm.
And we ended up, we walked up past the vice president's house, holiday house. So we kind of did a walk past his and into the surfing competition that was there at the time, which is why all the pro surfers were there. So there was this like really cool community that just, it felt like I was just, it just felt really good having that, just people getting together and getting together for a greater cause, So so it started there probably. And then I've watched my dad do so many amazing things with his life, in terms of, when we moved to Margaret River after that, and he was pretty heavily involved in the local community there, making sure that the youth kind of had things to do to try and keep them away from drugs.
Is that where he's originally from?
No, he's originally from Warrnambool.
Oh, yeah.
And then he moved to Torquay. My parents moved to Torquay when they were about 15 or 16. So back when
youngins.
Back when you could move when you were 15.
Just
you
put
know,
everything in just, the car and go.
Yeah, not really have a proper job. And I don't know. That sounds like good times back in those days. Yeah, so then we did Margaret River and I just saw him continue to get involved in a lot of social kind of like community groups and things like that. Yeah, really put his neck out to try and make his community a better place. So I guess I've got a lot to thank. I kind of emulated him really. And
does there... Like, I know your dad's Indigenous background. Has that affected how you look at the world?
It's an interesting one, that, because... So my dad was adopted in the 50s,
yep.
And we're actually not 100% sure what we are in terms of our ethnic and cultural background. He was very good at shielding us from any of the negative side, or not shielding us, but kind of making us aware that there is negative things out there, but he never really brought it onto us.
Mm.
But he, I know, went through a lot, particularly because he actually didn't know. So growing up in Warrnambool, he was the only dark kid in the school. And then that uncertainty of what we are. So and everyone, it's funny because everyone keeps telling me, you know, everyone's like, oh, well, you're Aboriginal. And you know, and I never say that I am. I kind of always just back, yeah. You know, I've been invited into the National Indigenous titles for surfing. And I'm always like, the fact that I don't 100% know, I don't know if I feel it really comfortable. And I've got Indigenous friends who are like, mate, if like you are one of us, you know, and I'm just like, which makes me feel great.
That's a DNA test right there.
Well, yeah, that's it. When you got the boys kind of going like, mate, jump on in. But yeah, so that's an interesting one. But in saying that, I think my whole family, so myself, my sister and my dad, have always felt definitely a deep connection.
Mm.
That
is interesting.
Yeah, like I've talked to my sister about it when, you know, and we've kind of agreed that some people get goosebumps when they hear the bagpipes. I get that when I hear didgeridoo. For me, as soon as I hear that, it just something in me just kind of goes straight up my backbone, and I'm just like, oh, that just resonates with me. But in saying that, I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know what I am in terms of that background, but it has changed my outlook, because as important as your cultural heritage is, for someone like myself who's not sure, I also look at it and break down all those barriers, and I go, at the end of the day, it's we're all human beings.
Yep.
And that's what we need to focus on is not taking away from anyone else's cultures or anything like that. But I just try to look at it from that perspective where I go, well, whether you're, you know, religious background, you know, different, or, you know, if you're your sexual orientation or your whatever it might be, for me that doesn't matter. You know, it's just let's look at what our similarities are and work with that.
Mm. And we all live on the planet.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm. So it affects all of us. You know.
So you've had an interesting career background as well. Start out in the environmental sector.
No. So as much as I grew up with an environmentally conscious kind of attitude and values, I hope some of your listeners are sitting down now.
It's okay.
So I used to work in the mines and the offshore industry on and off for a few years there. And
now you're organising a rally.
Against big oil. Yeah. So
it's funny how things change.
Yeah. And listen, I don't shy away from that for a second. For me, it's...
It was a booming industry in Australia, especially then. It was big.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And the money was there and I was young and single and just kind of like I had nothing tying me down. And then my excuse, I guess, was, well, if I don't do it, someone else will. It's like and this is again in my 20s where I just kind of, I was like, well, I might as well get in there and get some money out of it. And yeah, and then it kind of facilitated all my traveling and all of that. So it was just one other ingredient that's kind of brought me to where I am today.
Yeah.
And I've actually used it more as a tool and like that firsthand experience is really a tool now for what I'm doing. And I can actually sit there and actually tell people like, oh, I've been on those, you know, on an offshore, not a rig, but I've been on a massive pipe laying barge.
Yeah.
And I can tell you how horrible it is and how, you know, like I've seen that they, once they're out there and you're away from the kind of public eye, there's some pretty shitty things happening. You know what I mean? Mm. Like it really is kind of, it's something that was, yeah, it was eye opening. And funnily enough though, and this is like, yeah, I used to drive all of my workmates crazy because while we're sitting in, you know, whether it was offshore or whether it was at a gas refinery, here we are kind of just absolutely decimating the local environment and the broader kind of environment. And I'm there trying to reuse all the plastics as much as I could. And I was like recycling everyone else's. And I was trying to do my bit and crew, you know, and trying to like, I had some English crew that didn't understand that you had to turn the tap off because we have limited water resources and things. And I'd be like, mate, what are you doing? And you'd be like, what do you mean? There's water coming out of the tap, you know, like that's good. And I'm like, no, man, we're like, that comes from a limited resource. So even while I was there, I was environmentally conscious, but I'll admit that, yeah, the money was too good.
And really, who knows, maybe that behavior rubbed off on them in some small way.
Yeah.
Which is what you.
And it's also, it's also brought me, who knows where I would have been if I had have just not done that.
Just
or if I had have just stayed in, you know, and just got a normal job in my local, wherever, you know, like.
So you're studying now.
So I am studying. Yeah. I'm studying environmental science. And that was actually the funny thing was my final job. Yeah. My final job was close to a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm more than happy to say I probably earned close to 200 and something thousand dollars in that time. And it was the most soul destroying thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah.
I would come out of that 3 weeks and just be absolutely rattled, and it'd take me so long, and I'd just be sitting there going, what am I doing? Like, is this really me? Is this really what I wanted to do? I want to be part of this contribution. Like,
evidently not.
And then and that's where I started thinking, university, maybe I could go and like, maybe I am a little bit smarter than just, you know, just being some nobody that just grinds and sweeps up and thing. I was like, hang on, maybe I've got a little bit more to offer this world of ours. And then I started looking into, well, what is it that I actually am passionate about? And I thought, well, mining, I'm not. and I just thought, well, the environment, I'm like, well, that's something that I can really, I've always been passionate about, but never looked into too much on a educational or formalized kind of way. And yeah, so I just took up, I applied to a bunch of different universities in Melbourne and Geelong, but they didn't offer environmental science at Deakin. And I ended up getting in at Deakin, at Burwood in Melbourne.
Amazing.
So I'm kind of 2/3 of the way through. I've been taking a little bit slower. And I've deferred for the rest of this year because
got a bit on your plate.
Got a bit on my plate. And for anyone out there aspiring to be a candidate for an election, I really strongly urge you to. But there's a bit of work in there. But if you are, come and talk to me and I'll give you as much help as I can for sure.
That's a good offer.
Yeah, yeah.
So we can find you on Facebook, can't we? What's the Facebook tag?
Yep. So it's Damien Cole, which is spelled Damien. It's actually the French spelling. So Damien Cole, independent for South Darwin. So that's my page. Yeah, and I'm posting more and more things as this ramps up. And there's a lot of things going on in our local community and on a broader scale as well.
So that was Damien Cole from the Greater Geelong area running in the November 24th election. So, Max, how did you find that? Was that a fun experience?
It was. It was a lot easier than I expected. It is literally just setting up a conversation in an environment that you can put the mic on and not be disturbed. Trying to find a bit of furniture that's not creaky in my house is... Yeah, it was kind of challenging because
your house is full of character.
It's full of secondhand furniture.
Excellent.
I don't have anything new, but yeah, actually, we did quite well, and we sat with a cup of tea, just chatted. It was actually a lot easier than I thought. I had previously thought I'll get some questions lined up. Damo's a very chatty person, though, so it makes it easier.
Yeah, he sounded like a great guest for that. You could just have a chat with him and he wouldn't be stumped for things to say.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's good. So you come to us from a radio background. What were some of like the differences between what you're expecting to find doing like a podcast interview and your experiences in radio?
I guess the equipment. So I had wondered how I'm going to make a really nice quality recording. And thanks to you, I've been able to get my mic working to its optimum, and you've been guiding me through on the chat, so that was really helpful.
You've got
helpful.
The beanie or something fabric between the tripod legs and the
table,
right?
Yeah, I've actually got a very nice Peruvian Inca placemat underneath.
Oh, my goodness. That's high class.
Yeah, and just the difference, I suppose, is that I used to host radio shows on PBS FM as a music host. So I would have music in the background and a full desk of controls. I guess the difference is you can't turn the mic off and let the music play while you compose yourself. But yeah, it's, and the editing side of things as well. I think that was a big plus for me because I was like, oh, how would I edit? Because I don't, that would be the extra.
Yeah, that might be a bit of a bridge too far. Yep.
Yeah, if I had to do that part. But we've got a great team actually behind Climactic with a producer as well who's very quality oriented, which is very great, which is what we want. So. Yeah, it was.
So you've just sent off the file to us and we're going to have it all edited and we'll have this dropped in and then you'll just see your work up on the feed next week. We hope you enjoyed that interview from Torquay. We certainly did. And if you're looking forward to the next one from Maxine, we have some very good news for you. That was just part one of a two-part interview that Maxine did with Damian Cole. And the next part of that interview will be in your feed next week. And we are so excited to have Maxine on board. She is a fantastic interviewer with a whole lot of experience and a completely new perspective to add to the show. We're also really excited because this means we're at the point with the show where we are actually becoming a network. We are able to take in interviews done by other people across the country and put a spotlight on the great stories of people living their best lives in this time of climate change. So if you fancy you'd like to do what Maxine just did, what I do with my interviews in Melbourne, what Rich has done with his interviews in New South Wales, we would absolutely love to hear from you. Just drop us a line at hello@climactic.fm. All right, now, time for some credits. Our producer, Caleb Fidicaro. Our designer, Abigail Hawkins. Our composer, Greg Grossi. And our senior advisor, Gretchen Miller. On behalf of Maxine Baisley, we'd like to thank our guest this week, Damian Cole. Look forward to the second half of his interview coming next week. For myself and Rich, have a great week. Thank you for listening.
The Climactic Collective.
This show is produced by Hear Media, a boutique audio agency in Narm, Melbourne. To learn more and get in touch, head to hearmedia.studio. That's HERE Media.studio.